Well, happy Sabbath to you all. I hope you're doing well out there. Hopefully, you all have learned to or how to cut your hair in the meantime, or your spouse has. Otherwise, when we do meet in the future, we might all look like Forrest Gump did after he ran across the globe, I guess. I'm sure you all are doing well and missing you all greatly. Well, oftentimes on a long car ride growing up, especially I remember going from Paducah, Kentucky to Pensacola, Florida for the Feast of Tabernacles, I would usually ask the question, are we there yet? And, you know, you'd see some of the palm trees or, you know, we're getting close. But my father would usually respond to the question while driving, every time the wheel turns, you're getting a little bit closer. So kind of a general answer and not very specific. But it did usually satisfy my question for a little bit of time. You know, as we are younger, when we think back, we all have been taught patience. We all have had to be taught patience as a child. You know, and right now, as we have gotten older, we still are learning patience, and God is still definitely teaching us patience even today. But as we get older, sometimes patience does not seem any easier to conquer, or I'm sure we have all grown, but it's still something that's not an easy thing to conquer. We're all tested with patience. How long will traffic start to move? How long until my car is repaired? How long until I get off work? How long until the shutdown is over, or until your lockdown is over? How long until God intervenes? And of course, the most important question, how long until the return of Jesus Christ? We all seemingly ask the same questions, or the same very important question as when we were little. And that is, are we there yet? You know, this is not a new question. This is the same question that has been asked for thousands of years. This is a question that even the disciples asked Jesus Christ, and, you know, when are we there yet, basically, asking. So today I want to look at the question of are we there yet? And really we'll be looking at patience, not just in general, but more so patience as far as moving forward. And I don't, you know, I want to look at the need for patience and the need that we have for patience. But if you'd like a title for this first split sermon, it is, Are We There Yet? In the book of Luke, Luke 21, he records this question coming from the disciples being directed to him, basically saying, you know, when will these certain things be restored? When will be the end of the age? How do we know that we're on the end of the age? And Jesus Christ goes into details about the beginning of sorrows with wars, earthquakes in various places, famine, pestilence, and religious persecution. But at the end, Christ gives some encouragement, and he also gives them some admonition as well. Luke 21 in verse 17. Luke 21 in verse 17. Luke 21 in verse 17. And of course, he did speak about the persecution that would be taking place as well, and certain persecution that would take place. But he still, in spite of that, or despite that, he leaves them with some encouragement. Verse 17, "And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but not a hair of your head shall be lost. By your patience possess your souls." You know, Christ says, even though there will be persecution, even though there will be stressful times and perilous times, as we know, he still encourages them by saying some will not have even a hair on their head that will be lost. And then the admonition, by your patience possess your souls. Now, one might think, you know, why patience in such a time when there's such stress or turmoil, wouldn't that be the time to really take action? You know, here we have even, he talks in the previous verses of persecution or betrayal unto death. You know, wouldn't you think there would be more action that he would have encouraged them at that time instead of patience, you know, in our patience? Well, what did he mean by that? Why? You know, let's take action. Let's do something. Why patience? Why not take action ourselves? We can see part of the reason why in Acts 1 and verse 6. He answers part of the question and a major part of it. And when you think about, you know, even if there was certain action that could be centered upon, there's something even greater that we should acknowledge. Acts 1 and verse 6. You know, if there was anyone that could restore things back to normal or the way they should be, we know that Jesus Christ will be the one implementing the restoration of all things. So we know, you know, things are going to start with him. And, you know, when will things be restored is what they're asking. What was his response? Where did he direct them to focus on? Verse 6 in Acts chapter 1. Therefore, when they had come together, they asked him, saying, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom of Israel? And he said to them, it is not for you to know times or seasons which the Father has put in his own authority. You know, he directed them to think about who has the authority and who is it that really will begin the certain process of restoration. It starts with the Father. The Father has the authority. You know, Jesus Christ, no doubt, he will be that vital instrument. That restoration will start with him, and yet he directs it to the Father and his authority. Christ directs things back to the Father. We look to the Father's authority, especially in times of stress. We look to the Father for deliverance, for strength, for encouragement. You know, right now, we would love for things to be restored tomorrow. However, we must patiently look to the Father's timing. He has the authority. He could end a virus immediately if he decided to do so. He could turn things around very quickly. But we look to the Father and his authority. You know, right now there are so many who question, well, who has the authority to implement this or the expertise to implement that? And many, you can get 100 different opinions out there. You just flip on the news and everybody will say, well, based on their opinion or their expertise and basically their authority, we should do X, Y, and Z. You know, you have some of the most brilliant minds exploring different decisions regarding this pandemic. However, intelligence does not always lead one to the right decision. We must be going to the Father and looking to him, asking for his deliverance, asking for his intervention. And there's patience that is involved in that. Patiently looking to the Father, patiently trusting in the Father's decision. There's an old Dutch proverb that says, a handful of patience is worth more than a bushel of brains. And, you know, in this situation, this is a situation we just don't have much control of ourselves personally, except what we can control ourselves. But patience, you know, right now is so valuable to us. It is worth more than the intelligence that is out there. And we need God's protection. We need God's strength. We need God's guidance. And we look for God's timing. And so we need patience as we look to God's timing with all of this. You know, if we don't trust God in whatever situation of patience that we face, of course, we're faced with a variety of challenges or stresses or trials regarding patience. That is a very difficult trial that we all face at times. We certainly are in one right now. This is a test of patience, no doubt. It's a trial involving patience. But if we lose sight of God, if we don't trust God the Father and look to him, in this situation, or trust that, you know, Christ is the head of the church, or you know, trust God the Father, we will become restless, and we will decide to maybe take actions ourselves, maybe take matters into our own hands. But we must remember that by our patience possess our souls or our life. By our patience, we will look to the Father's authority and deeply trust that He knows what is going on. We trust that He can direct, that He is the one that directs nations, kings. He raises up kings. He brings them down. You know, national authority, He puts them in the position that they're in. He directs. We trust that God is the one that raises up nations and brings nations down. We trust that God could very easily destroy a virus, very easily just wipe it out if He wanted to do so. You know, we trust that even though we are self-quarantining and more isolated, that He still cares for us, that He still is actively involved, that He does want us to have that joy of the fellowship of one another and have a unity. He knows. He sees what's going on. He sees the big picture. He understands. And we trust in that. We trust that He still desires for us to be together, to fellowship face to face. And when that is, we look to the Father for the timing of it all. We trust that He knows our needs before we know our need. And we trust that He will never leave us or forsake us. Christ will never leave us or forsake us. He is the head of the church. He knows and He cares. He does care. He does want us to be comforted and strengthened. Right now, we all face a major test of patience. You know, everyone is doing their best to make lemons or lemonade out of lemons. I do enjoy that myself, but we're still looking for that ice cream. We're still looking for the ice cream with the cherry on top. We're still looking for strawberries with whipped cream. You know, we desire to be together, no doubt. And, you know, the longer it takes, the more we might feel evil is winning. You know, this is taking too long. Why can't we just be together? Something is not right here. Why is God allowing this? The psalmist, Asaph, had to wrestle with this question. How long will you allow the wicked to prosper? And he eventually came to the right conclusion, but there was a wrestling going on inside. He had to wrestle with this question and with the doubt that he had. Let's turn to Psalm 73 in verse 1. Psalm 73, and starting in verse 1, and we'll see a little bit of this, you know, internal struggle going on, and some of the being able to view God correctly. He's having trouble really seeing things in the right way and how he should act, having some serious doubts about God's purpose. And we'll start in verse 1 of Psalm 73. It says, "Truly, God is good to Israel, to such as are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. For I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." You know, I saw the wicked prospering, and my feet almost stumbled. You know, I had a bad attitude, saying, "For there are no pangs in their death." He goes over, you know, how the wicked is prospering. But verse 10, we'll drop down to verse 10. "Therefore his people return here, and waters of a full cup are drained by them. And they say, how does God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High?" You know, the wicked are prospering, and he's concerned, you know, they're going to think that you don't know. You don't see what's going on. You don't understand what's going on. They're going to think that. And the knowledge, you know, they're not going to see that you have the knowledge as the Most High. "Behold, these are the ungodly who are always at ease. They increase in riches. Surely I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocence, for all the day long I have been plagued and chastened every morning." You know, his soul is vexed. He's very stressed. He doesn't understand why. And, of course, incorrectly placing the blame with God. And, well, we know we heard a very inspiring sermon by Mr. Kylo, you know, really going over the details of what is, you know, what can we say is of God, an act of God, and what is not. And, you know, he's kind of placing some blame, wrestling with these emotions, but he does eventually come to the right conclusion. But he did wrestle with the thought of even, should I take this doubt and stress that I'm feeling, should I express this to others around me? If I had said, I will speak thus, behold, I would have been untrue to the generations of your children. When I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me. So he did contemplate kind of spreading this disbelief and doubt, but he did not do that. And then it says in verse 17, until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understood their end. You know, he came to the right conclusion. That was taking those perplexed thoughts to God and crying out to God, asking for that understanding or to see it clearly or taking it to God. And then I understood their end. Then he saw things clearly. But he had to take that to God, the evil prevailing that he saw. He did not understand what was going on. But he took it to God and he saw more clearly. You know, if he would have, I guess, taken it into his own hands, so to speak, he could have very easily sought comfort from others. Can you relate to this? Can you relate to that? What's going on here? Why is this happening? And, you know, some negativity and spread. But he would have diminished God's supreme authority. So, you know, trying to take a situation into one's own hands, it just will never yield positive results. You think about the Israelites who made a few pit stops on the way to the promised land before wandering, of course, for 40 years, but and then later going in. But, you know, think about a time where they had stopped and Moses had to go up on the mountain and he was gone for a period of time, not too long, but it was too long for them. You know, Moses is gone, and so he's left us out here to die, and we're just going to do what we want to do. So we'll make a golden calf. You know, the works of their hands turn to idolatry, turn to evil worship, and evil results, very perverse things that took place. But they took it into their own hands. You know, it is interesting. Here we are, you think the whole world, basically, to one degree or another, is almost on lockdown. And so everybody is forced to be a little more patient. They're at home. You know, the last sermon by Mr. Horchek, he mentioned what was going on in some of the homes, how alcohol sales have gone up, how pornography has gone up, how domestic violence has gone up. And so here there are, you know, everybody is faced with certain decisions to be made. And will they look to God for help and take that to God, or will they try to fill a void by their own means, by their own hands? And we could think about Moses. Moses was tired of dealing with a stiff-necked, stubborn people. And you know, all the complaining, the murmuring, the complaining. it was more than he could handle, I guess we could say. But I guess we could say they were not there yet, spiritually speaking. And this was frustrating him. Well, what did he do? He took it into his own hands. What did it cost him? Let's turn to Numbers 20 in verse 2. Numbers 20 and verse 2. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought us brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness that we and our animals should die here. So, you know, of all the miracles that God had performed, still not trusting God and complaining, and we're going to die out here. And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? You know, again, they feel this is a situation where evil is. You brought us out here to die. This is, you know, Egypt. We could have been there. That wouldn't have been an evil place to continue to live in, would it have? Is it not a place of grain and figs or vines and pomegranates? Nor is there any water to drink. They didn't have what they wanted. It was not what they desired to have. And it's to them it is an evil place. So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals." Again, God is going to provide, again, another miracle. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of the rock?" So by his own hand, he's going to take things into his own hand. He's frustrated with them. And then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly. So even, you know, it shows how merciful God is. Even through his disobedience, he still gave them the needed water that they needed. The congregation and their animals drank. But what was the consequence? As we all know, and the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe me," you know, there was not that trust, and really he was not patient in the situation, but it stemmed from a lack of trust, a lack of believing that God knows all, he sees all, he's going to still continue to work with them. He did not believe him to hollow me in the eyes of the children of Israel. He did not he did not hallow God's name to them. It was a dishonor. And he did not introduce God in the right way either. And in their eyes, he brought shame. "Therefore, you did not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. You shall not bring them into it." So, you know, what a major consequence for taking things into his own hand. What a challenging situation and a sad situation that happened. But, you know, it is by our patience that possess our soul and our life. And in this case, it was the promised land. If you could have that patient trust in God, believe what he said, and have those obedient actions to follow. Moses lacked the patience needed. We have another example to consider, Abraham and Sarah. Now, truly, this would be a major test of patience. And, you know, of course, you know they would wrestle with it. How in the world is this going to come about? And probably over time, it wore on them as they think, well, he's going to do this. He said he was going to. There is a promise. He promised. So it's going to happen. Well, time went by. And then they got to a point. I don't see how this is going to end up. I can't figure this out. So God must want us to take action on ourselves. Hagar, you know, my maid, this must be, the solution is with us. We must do something. We must make a decision. We must act. And what did that lead to? Of course, we know the turmoil for ages and ages. Taking things into our own hands, is leaving God out of the picture, is never the right solution. So what can we do? See what we maybe shouldn't do when it comes to patiently trusting God. What can we do? And we can easily see that taking things into our own hands is not the right solution. What can we do? Does God want us to just be neutral? Just be like a bump on a log. Don't do anything. You should have no zeal, no passion for a certain situation. You know, don't let it bother you at all. It doesn't, you know, just don't do anything. You know, what should we do as we strive for patience? James 5 and verse 7 through 18. Not just patience in general, but patience with our trust in God. Patiently trusting God. Patiently believing that God sees all. He knows all. He's very aware of the situation that we all face, that we all are going through. James 5 and verse 17. You know, God knows that not being together week after week, it does wear on us. And you think about those who are shut-ins who face this on a regular basis. There are those who can't week after week. And you think, you know, about the importance of being able to visit those individuals. And it's very important for them. And we can see that a little more clearly probably through this. But what can we do? James 5 and verse 7, starting in verse 7. You know, you think about persevering and how God wants us to endure, to persevere, but yet in patience, persevere with patience. Verse 7 of chapter 5, James 5 and verse 7, therefore be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. Of course, we know who it is that provides the rain. We know who it is. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You've heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord. You know, the end is he blessed him very much. He had patience. He had to persevere, and he was patient in doing so. But the end result is that God was going to bless. And he was bringing him to more perfect, building him, helping him to grow in patience. But the Lord, okay, the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, lest you fall into judgment. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. You know, here's some things that we can do as we are patient. One, have love towards one another. Not grumble against one another. Don't turn on one another. You know, it is interesting in my neighborhood. We do have HOA guidelines that we have, and since everybody has been kind of held hostage in their home, most of the people in my neighborhood are teachers, and so they're not going to school. They're all in the neighborhood, and now there's all these issues with HOA. Why isn't this person not doing this? Car on the road. And I can understand some of the points. You know, you want a neighborhood to function by the guidelines, but people are starting to get real nitpicky, and now, you know, it's almost turned into this bitter hatred, envy. They're stressed with the situation, and now they're turning on each other. And you can just see the different messages. Some are just very vicious and hateful. And it turned into this with one question. Can we park our cars on the side of the road? And then after that, it just got heated and heated. And, you know, it's just amazing. Part of it was miscommunication. You could even see where there was no ill will towards this other person, but insecurity. So there was attack and then another attack. And it just kept mounting. So, you know, what do we do as we're trying to be patient? Well, we don't want to turn on our neighbors, that's for sure. We want to uphold love and peace and be peacemakers. But there are specific things for us to do. So not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. And we have pray for one another. Anyone suffering, let him pray. Anyone cheerful, let him sing psalms. Anyone among you sick, let him call for the elders of the church, and let him pray over you, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith will save the sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven. Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. You know, lots of action here, even while practicing patience. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heaven gave rain, and the earth produce fruit. So we can cry out to God. We should. We can pray for one another. We should. We can reach out to one another. You know, and that is while we practice patience. As we look to God for intervention, we're not only to be patient with God's timing and trusting God, but we'd also want to be patient with one another, not taking whatever stress we feel on those that we love the most inside our household. You think about God's patience with us. How many times, you know, have we fallen and asked God to help us or to strengthen us? No, you've asked too many times. Sorry, that's it. I'm not, you know, shouldn't you have gotten this by now? You know, aren't you there yet? Shouldn't you be there yet? But that's not God's response. He's always patient with us, and we should try to exhibit that to one another as well. There's a story about a father and a son who's sitting on a bench behind his house. The father was in his 70s, the son was in his 40s. They're both sitting on a bench, and father, he looked out and saw a bird, and he asked his son, "What kind of bird is that?" And he said, "It's a sparrow, Dad." He said, "Oh, okay." And then another bird came. He said, What kind of bird is that?" "That's also a sparrow, Dad." "Okay. What about that one right there?" "That's a sparrow, Dad. What's the deal?" You know, he gets mad. He gets angry. He gets frustrated. "Why do you keep asking? It's a sparrow." And he said, "Oh, hold on just a second." So he went to inside the house. He pulled out his journal, and he came back, and he said, "Go ahead and read this journal out loud." And he said, "On this day, my son had just turned 3 years old, and he asked me what kind of bird that was. I said, a sparrow. He asked me 21 times what bird it was, and I told him 21 times it was a sparrow. And each time he asked, I gave him a hug and without getting mad, and I had a feeling of affection towards my innocent little boy. Each time he asked me, what is that bird?" And when you think about the patience of our Father in heaven and the patience that he shows with us, how do we want to respond? Do we want to respond with that same type of patience with those around us? We certainly are learning more about how to be patient with one another. That's a part of the growth process, it's part of our calling. You know, you think about trials and tests. What is part of the end result of a trial or a test? What is it developing in us? What are we learning? James 1 and verse 2. James 1 and verse 2. We never really think about profiting from trials, but that is what God has in mind. He's bringing us to a perfection. James 1 and verse 2, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." And when you think about our patience, it is so much tied to our faith and our trust in God. When we are tested, when there are trials, it's a testing of our faith, but it is with the intention that we will develop, that we will grow, and that we will come out with something good. And that would be patience. No doubt this is a test of patience. Patience in what God's timing is with all of this, and patience in the relationships around us. There's an article on Life, Hope, and Truth written by Mr. Tom Clark, and it's entitled, Patience is a Virtue That Can Build Relationships. And one of those points, he focuses on the relationship that we are building with God the Father. And in one of the excerpts, I'd like to read that. He said, God has promised never to leave or forsake us, Hebrews 13:5. But nowhere does he promise to answer all our prayers immediately, or to answer them in exactly the way we desire. As parents, we can answer our children's requests with a yes, no, or a later, depending on what we believe is best for them. Our Father in heaven has the same options when answering us. As difficult as it may be to accept a no, faith demands that we put our trust in him and know what is best, that he knows what is best. And how can we tell the difference between a no and a later? We have to wait, and that requires patience. And so that is the difficult part of patience. If the answer is no, or if it's later, only time will tell. And so do we trust and believe in God's promises and what he desires for us? Regardless, we must be careful not to lose patience with God's timing. Who are we to question God? Who are we to question God's timing? We must never lose sight of the perfect perspective of our Creator. And that involves humility, and how humility is tied with patience. I'd like to conclude with two final scriptures. Keeping things in perspective as we strive to be patient, looking to God, His timing with all of it. But part of our patience does relate to humility in our mindset, remembering who we are in comparison to who God is. Isaiah 57 and verse 15. Isaiah 57 and verse 15. Isaiah 57 and verse 15. For thus says the High and Lofty One, who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy. Keep things into perspective. We cannot say we have inhabited eternity. We think about living in eternity where there is no time. What's it like to always exist? Keep things in perspective. Who we are in comparison to who he is. But who is it that he will take notice of? Those who recognize that. Those who are humble in his sight. I will dwell in the high and holy place with him who has a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble, and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. God is going to lift up, he's going to encourage, he's going to strengthen, he's going to revive those who put their trust in him and are humble in the process, looking to him, realizing God is God, and who are we in comparison to him and his time. One final scripture to conclude, 1 Peter 5, in verse 5. 1 Peter 5 and verse 5. It's always according to God's timing. So as we wait on God's timing, as we look to God's timing in all trials or tests or whatever we face, where we are looking for an answer, and we always must consider it is his timing, and he will lift up those who keep things in perspective with humility. 1 Peter 5 and verse 5, likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed in humility. For God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. So as we look for God, for the timing on everything, we strive to have that humble, contrite heart that he will encourage. We trust what Romans 8 and verse 28 says, all things work together for good for those who love God and those who are called according to his purpose. All things work together for good according to his purpose. His plan, His timing on all things. So, of course, we will still go to God. We still cry out to Him. We still may ask, are we there yet? How close are we for intervention? How close until Jesus Christ's return? How soon will it be? Are we there yet? We can still ask that. But as we look patiently to God and His timing, we must trust His power and pray for His kingdom to come, continuing to ask, seek, and knock. And of course, we certainly will ask, are we there yet? But the real question might really be, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Time will tell. But one thing is for certain, every time the wheel turns, we're getting a little closer to our destination.